Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
It's time for John Feinstein from the Washington Post. John is presented by All American Pest Control. They're not across the country. They're around the corner. Learn more at allamericanpestcontrol.com. John, what a final it was at Wimbledon yesterday.
You know, Chad, I have been around tennis since I was a kid. I can remember watching Arthur Ashe win the first U.S. Open at Forest Hills in 1968 when I was a kid. So that just gives you some perspective on how long I've been watching tennis, and you know how long I've been watching and covering sports. That was just remarkable. I mean, as old and jaded as I am, I was on the edge of my seat at the end. I had chills, you know, during those final moments, and when Federer had the match points, and I was sitting in my office watching, and during the award ceremony, which I love at Wimbledon, by the way, because you have real royalty there, not corporate royalty, you know, giving out cars and stuff. It's a very cool ceremony. But I was applauding, sitting here alone in my office, for Federer and Djokovic. And my wife came in and said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm applauding for these guys." And she said, "But you're sitting here all alone." I said, "I know, I can't help myself." It was just that good. It was the kind of sporting event that reminds us all why we love sports, why we put up with all the garbage that is unfortunately part of sports, especially nowadays, because you get a moment like that. And because it's not predictable, and because Federer is too damn old to be as good as he is, to beat Nadal and then come within one point of beating Djokovic 2 days later, and then Djokovic was able to dig himself out and beat not only Federer but the crowd, which for obvious reasons was clearly in Federer's corner. And it was amazing. I mean, the whole thing gave me chills, and there are times when I think I'm past having chills for anything.
John, he is so cool, calm, and collected, and I'm talking about Roger Federer, that you don't really see any frustration on him while he's playing. But after the match, you know, he's courtside for the interview, and there's this big appreciation for Roger Federer, and rightfully so. What he's doing, as you said, 37, almost 38 years old. But I'm watching his face, I'm hearing his answers, and you can tell this is a loss that will eat at him because of those championship points that were lost and the opportunities he had in that match. And you could see that on his face after it.
Yeah, there's no question. You're 100% right. I was thinking the exact same thing. And again, he still handled it with grace when Sue Barker said, "You know, and the two of you gave us a match we'll remember forever." And he said, "Well, I'm going to want to forget it." And I think that it was funny. Everybody laughed, but it was also true. It was clearly painful for him to even talk about the match. It was clearly painful for him to have to stand there and watch Djokovic do the, you know, the routine with the photographers with the trophy. I remember years ago, Maryland lost a basketball game to Michigan State in the NCAA tournament. They were down 16 with like 4 minutes to go, rallied, took a 2-point lead in the final seconds, and there was almost an accident that led to a guy named Corey Lucas making a 3-point shot. Whoever had the ball was trying to pass the ball to someone else, and the guy ducked, and the ball went right to Corey Lucas. He hit a three at the buzzer. And Gary Williams said to me afterwards, "You know, I'm too old to get over this. I'll never get over this." And you're right, Chad. I think we don't know if Roger Federer will ever play another final at Wimbledon or in any other major. He might, but even if he does, he's going to look back and say, "Boy, you know, it was literally on my racket, and I let it get away."
John, in a lot of ways, I understand the fifth set tiebreak, the 12-12 tiebreak that they went to. Where I don't love it is in a final. What were your thoughts on going to that tiebreak in a final on a stage like that? I could have watched those guys go to 30-28 or whatever it took.
Yeah,
it seemed just kind of surreal that it just kind of ended.
Yeah, you know, Will, and there's a lot of to be said about that. I think, first of all, the reason they changed the rule this year was because there were a bunch of matches last year that went like 13-11, 18-16, 24-22 in the fifth. And when a match goes that long, it messes with the schedule during the tournament, and it also makes it much more difficult for the guy who wins to come back and win and play his next match, especially if it goes 2 days, which some of those matches do, and he's got to come back and play the next day. But you're right, a final is different, without any doubt, because you don't have to worry about schedule. You don't have to worry about coming back the next day. The problem is, how do you play a tournament under one set of rules through the semis and then say, okay, we're changing the rule for the final? I think that becomes an issue. So I understand it. I think that they may go back and look at it again. But 12 all certainly gives both players the opportunity to win, to get a break of serve, which they both did, and win the match, and neither one of them did. So 12 all, they went to the tie break. I think McEnroe said it right, that at 12 all, you know, maybe it's okay then. It's okay then. Remember, you know, at the U.S. Open, they play a fifth set tiebreak at 6-all. I don't think anybody has had a major problem with that, and that's been going on since the 1970s that way. So I hear your point. I don't think it's wrong. I think Wimbledon will probably take another look at it. It's ironic that the only match the whole tournament that went to a final set tiebreak was this one.
John, so I'm watching the broadcast yesterday, like a lot of people, on ESPN. Chris Fowler and John and Patrick McEnroe on the call. I say on the call, but there were long stretches of complete silence.
Yeah, I thought that was great, Chad.
I thought I like it a lot of the time, but I guess my question is, does it come a point where it's too much silence? I felt like there were times where they could have explained something or reacted to something more, but it's almost like they just made a decision, or ESPN did, to remain completely silent for sometimes a complete game at a time without saying a word.
Well, I don't think they said anything for the first 4 points of the tiebreak. They were completely silent. And you could say, you know, well, you know, they should have pointed out the mini break when Djokovic got it right there at the beginning. But I think, and especially when you got the little score bug up there, which you can see at all times, I'm very much into less is more in television. I think far too often we have guys screaming over stuff that doesn't need to be screamed over. If you're going to err on one side, I'd rather see him err on the side they erred on. I think with all the quiet, John McEnroe in particular was making great points throughout. I loved it at the end when, you know, as soon as they've shaken hands, Fowler, who I think is very good, but he starts right into the, you know, who's the greatest player of all time argument. And John just said, no, this isn't the time for that. This is the time to appreciate what we just saw. And for a great player like McEnroe, a guy who won Wimbledon himself 3 times, to understand that and make that point to the viewers and say, look, folks, you know, you saw something really special here. Because if you're sitting there and you're just, you know, someone like you or me, when John McEnroe says a tennis match was special, whether he was honored, privileged to watch a tennis match, then you know you saw something extraordinary.
I thought it was ballsy of John McEnroe, but it was so John McEnroe of John McEnroe, because he didn't wait until Fowler was done.
No,
I was
going to
ask you about
right
that.
In.
He cut him off and said, stop that right now.
Yeah.
Let's not talk about that now. Let's just enjoy this match and the greatness of these two players. And you could tell, and you know, I could see Fowler being handed all this from producer, where he's going, he's about to launch in a bunch of stats and everything else they've done, and gets completely cut off by McEnroe. I thought it was great television to witness that, and it was ballsy by John McEnroe. You don't hear a lot of color commentators step all over the play-by-play guy like that.
Yeah, and that's why John, I think tennis is blessed with two truly great analysts, I believe, John and Mary Carrillo. And I could see if Mary had been sitting there instead of John, that she would have done the same thing. She would have gone, oh, hang on a second, Chris. And the thing is, John, for all of his, you know, controversial past, is extraordinarily well-liked by the people he deals with. And I was one of them. Same with Mary. So they could get away with doing something like that. Now, if you did something like that to Brent Musburger years ago, he might have a temper tantrum. But Fowler's not Brent Musburger. He's got an ego, I'm sure, I know. But I think he understood that John was right to jump in there and say, hang on a second. They'd just shaken hands, right? And Fowler starts into, the argument about who's the greatest player ever. And John, no, not now. And I love that. And it's one of the things I love about John.
John Feinstein on 104.5 The Zone. Presented by All American Pest Control. With plans starting at just $39 a month. Visit yuckbugs.com.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. John Feinstein, presented by All American Pest Control, with us for another segment. John, I'm watching the match yesterday, and I'm thinking about American tennis, and I know that there's an appreciation for these guys with American sports fans, but I wonder if it's an appreciation that won't be fully realized for 10, 15, 20 years from now when we look back on this era and the greatness of these non-American-born tennis stars.
Chad, I don't think there's any doubt that many, many Americans are missing out on what I think is the golden era in the history of tennis. I think when you put together tennis's Mount Rushmore on the men's side, you can pick your order because I don't think the final standings per se are finalized yet. But it's clearly Federer, it's clearly Nadal, it's clearly Djokovic, and I think most people would put Rod Laver in there as the fourth. He quote-unquote only won 11 majors, but missed 5 years at the peak of his career because of stupid tennis rules about pros playing in Grand Slams. And he twice won calendar Slams. That's how good he was. So three of the four best players, you want to throw Sampras in there, three of the five best players of all time, have been going head-to-head against each other now for about 10 years. And playing classic matches like the one we saw yesterday, and playing classic matches against one another, you know, forever. I mean, they've all played each other 40 times or more, and a lot of Americans are missing out because we haven't had an American man win a major championship since Andy Roddick won the U.S. Open in 2003, and we really haven't had anybody contend. Roddick, the last American to make a final was Roddick in 2009 at Wimbledon when he lost a classic match to Federer, 16-14 in the fifth. But I don't see anybody on the horizon who's going to be Roddick or Sampras or Agassi or Courier or McEnroe or Connors or any of the great American players of the last 20, 30 years. People went bonkers when Francis Tiafoe made the quarters at the Australian in January. Well, he's ranked 38th in the world. He's a good player, but he's about to turn 22. McEnroe won his first major when he was 19. Connors won his first major when he was 20. Sampras was 19. I mean, you go down the list, if you're not a top 10 player by the time you're 21 or 22, you're probably not getting there. So we're definitely in a chasm right now on the men's side in the United States, whereas on the women's side, there have been a lot of good young American players have come up behind the Williams sisters, and it's a completely different kind of situation.
John Feinstein from the Washington Post is our guest. He is presented by All American Pest Control. So, John, I watched the ESPYs. I'm assuming you did not.
The what?
The perfect. That's exactly the response I wanted, because I'm going to throw something out there to you, and you tell me what you think, because I'm not a huge fan of the award show either. But
it's the ESPN's tribute to ESPN.
Yes,
is the way I describe it.
But also, John, it is ESPN's tribute. I mean, what they did with Bill Russell, for instance, was good with the Arthur Ashe Courage Award and the 10-15 minute video they did for him. But I'm watching the show and I'm thinking, this is just one long standing ovation from everyone that's there. With all the people working at ESPN, with all the time you have to fill on all those networks, why not take an hour and do a Bill Russell special? Why not take an hour and do a pre-produced show on the woman who's a veteran with one leg that climbs mountains and these types of stories? I don't know why they try to cram this into this forced self-celebration that's called the ESPYs at this point, when they could simply use their the magic they have, the people they have, the resources they have, that's right, the money they have, to put something better out there. And I don't know why they don't do that at this point.
Well, because, again, the ESPYs are a couple things. First of all, they are ESPN's tribute to ESPN. It gives them their chance once a year to bring in non-sports celebrities. And I don't know how Tracy Morgan did as the host. I'm assuming he was probably no better, no worse than all the other hosts they've had.
Well, and John, you know this, that those athletes have such a low, the comedic value isn't there because the room is so cold. Because there's no sense of humor about themselves.
When I have watched in past,
yeah, they're not great. You're right.
The jokes aren't very good.
Yeah.
They're forced. But beyond that, ESPN, on that Wednesday night of the All-Star break weekend, they need programming, and they know they've got a wide-open field. And they're going to get ratings, and they're going to get good advertising dollars out of it because there's nothing competing with them. There's no other baseball game going on. Football training camps haven't started. Wimbledon isn't played at night. So they have no competition. And, I really believe this, that if not for Jim Valvano's speech that first year, and that was the first year, 1993, I'm not sure the ESPYs would have made it to year three. But his speech was so riveting and so heartbreaking that people went, oh, the ESPYs, they're great because of 11 minutes. And there have been other moments like that. And sadly, tragically, they usually involve somebody being given an award who's dying of cancer. I mean, we've seen that on several occasions. They even invented an award for Valvano, so they have an excuse to give out two Courage Awards. And I know I sound cynical, but yes, I was thinking this last night. Different subject, but the same subject. Did you watch the Sunday Night Baseball game? And they did. They put the announcers on top of the green monster.
Yes, the monster seats. Yep, I saw it.
I don't know what in the world that adds to the broadcast at all, because you're still seeing the same shots, same camera shots that you see, and they're doing the game basically off of monitors. It's not like they're looking at it at the game from a unique perspective. But before the game actually started, they showed the three announcers. Walking into the little press box or press area, the broadcasting area they set up for them, like, oh, well, here are the three most important people in the stadium arriving. And, ESPN does that all the time. It bothers the hell out of me, by the way, that they employ Alex Rodriguez, who's like the biggest liar in the history of sports, and they're making him out to be a star again, which is gross, in my opinion. But that's a separate story for a separate day. But ESPN is all about glorifying ESPN. It's what they do.
Well, John, I feel like, too, that an awards for award show for sports should just be championships, right? I mean, shouldn't that be enough, that winning a Super Bowl should be enough to be honored as a football team, other than having to be called the best football team? Well,
right.
Shouldn't winning a championship be enough for those kinds of things?
Like you, so the Vince Lombardi Trophy and the ESPY is up there with the Vince Lombardi Trophy in some way, shape, or form. Are you kidding me? You're right, Will. And they, they kind of make up awards because they got to kill, 3 hours?
Yeah.
So they come up with these awards, Now, I will
best
say
Best Viral Moment was one of the awards this year.
What was it? Best viral
moment.
Jeez, I'm so sorry I missed that. but there are things. Look, as with anything, it's never all good or all bad. Amy Bakkersteady, the girl who made the par playing the hole at Phoenix with Gary Woodland, the girl, I shouldn't call her girl, she's 20 years old, the woman who has Down syndrome, was nominated. I don't even know what she was nominated for. But I was working on a Gary Woodland piece, and I talked to her dad last week on the day of the ESPYs, and he was talking about how excited Amy was to be there and to meet all these celebrities and to be a part of this thing. And that's cool to me, that somebody like Amy Bakkersteady gets to be part of something that she, she'll remember. I don't even know if she won, by the way. I assume she didn't, because I would have heard about it from the golf people if she had. But nevertheless, There is that good side to it, and ESPN will use those good things, use those special moments that you're bound to have in a 3-hour show at some point, to say, oh, the ESPYs are great. The ESPYs aren't great.
John is a big baseball fan. I'm excited for the next 2 weeks because for the first time, Major League Baseball's trade deadline is really the trade deadline at July 31st. How crazy and how much, really, I guess the better way to phrase this is, how good is this for the game of baseball to have this 2 to 3 week sprint after the All-Star break for teams to become buyers or sellers?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think it is a very good idea because the trade deadline was really fraudulent before this year, because what they would do is you would take your whole team on August 1st, put it through waivers, and there was an unwritten rule you didn't claim anybody. One time, I think the Yankees claimed Jose Canseco one time to keep him from going to the Red Sox and ended up getting stuck with him when he was near the end of his career. But generally speaking, everybody would get through waivers, and that's why 2 years ago, Justin Verlander could get traded on August 31st in a trade that ultimately probably helped decide the World Series. So now that you're right, it's a real deadline. The GMs have to make decisions, buyers or sellers, or neither, now, not between now and August 31st. You can't wait, you know, sit back and say, well, we'll see where we are with a month to go. And I think you're going to see a heck of a lot of activity because there are so many teams who still think themselves in contention, at least for a wild card, and that's kind of the genius of the wild card. My only problem with it is the Mets management sitting back and saying, oh, we could still be buyers because, you know, we're only 11 games under 500 or whatever the heck they are.
John Feinstein joins us every week here on the show. He's presented by All American Pest Control. They're not across the country. They're around the corner. Learn more at allamericanpestcontrol.com. John, thanks so much. We'll talk to you again next Monday.
Chad, we'll appreciate it. Take care.